Good morning, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Some panhandler messages are brutally honest, like the one I saw outside the downtown Smith's Marketplace last week that read, "I need beer." Others pull at your heartstrings. Cold and hungry, anything will help. No matter the approach, courts have ruled that the messages are protected under the First Amendment. But what if panhandlers drive away customers or intimidate employees? Are sidewalk solicitors putting a damper on tourism dollars? Today on the program, we're talking about panhandling, about free speech, and about security. Joining me in studio this hour, Brian Barnard. He is a civil rights attorney in Salt Lake City. He represented four panhandlers who challenged Utah's anti-panhandling law. And last month, a federal court judge ruled in his favor. He joins me in studio. Brian, good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Kathy Bray. She is president and CEO of Volunteers of America Utah, a nonprofit that addresses homelessness, substance abuse, and volunteer services. Kathy, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Later on in the program, we're talking about launching local musicians, about the services provided by the nonprofit Music Garage. But first, panhandling. How do you handle panhandlers? Do you spare a dime, or do you save your contributions for homeless providers? If you have questions or comments about the legal aspects of panhandling, you can give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. And Kathy Bray, I want to start with you. Give us a profile of panhandlers. Who are panhandlers here in Utah?
I actually think that's quite a diverse group. I'm not sure we can profile them. I would say that some of them are people who have come on a tough time and are trying to get some emergency money right away today, and that may be the first time they've panhandled and they'll get what they need and move on. Well, others may be homeless and trying to put together some resources, and then we know that not all panhandlers are homeless, so it really is quite a diverse group. Some folks have apartments, some folks do not.
So when you see a panhandler and you think you're helping someone who's homeless, that's not necessarily the case.
Right. I don't know that we really have a good idea of who's sign is accurate to their story. We just have to do our best to make a decision about whether we're going to give to panhandlers or not. And what we recommend is that you kind of determine a philosophy. How do you feel about it? What do you think about it? Would you like to give to people? And if not, what are you going to say? And all of that before you're approached.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any idea how many panhandlers are out there along the Wasatch Front?
I do not have a number. I know that the city police department and the service providers are really trying to get to know the individual people who are out there so that we can learn whether services would help them move away from panhandling, and then we offer those if that's the case.
Many jurisdictions have tried to regulate panhandling, where you can ask for money, when you can solicit. But at the end of the day, most of that legislation has been ruled unconstitutional. Brian Barnard, describe the First Amendment protections afforded to soliciting, to begging.
Well, sidewalks are a public forum. People can stand on the sidewalk and espouse views or ask for money or solicit votes. Sidewalks are traditionally a place where the First Amendment is to be exercised. So if somebody wants to sell Girl Scout cookies or ask for votes or ask for money on the sidewalk, that's a protected area. And what's happened, especially now with the ruling last month, is the courts have held that if there's going to be laws restricting the right of panhandlers, they have to be very narrowly tailored. The law that was challenged and that was ruled to be unconstitutional was a very poorly drafted law. And what it said was essentially that nobody could stand on the sidewalk and solicit donations or solicit business, so that the guy that stands out in front of a pizza parlor with a sign was breaking the law. The guy that stands out in front of a restaurant and asks people to park their car, the valet parking guy, was breaking the law. But the law was not being enforced against those folks. It was only being enforced against the scruffy-looking panhandlers. The Salvation Army guy at Christmas time ringing the bell was breaking the law, but the law was not being enforced against him. And that's one of the concerns that the federal court judge had, was that it was not being properly, equally enforced. So there are laws that can be enforced against aggressive, if you will, panhandlers. But the poorly drafted laws are the ones that are subject to constitutional challenges.
You represented four clients who, in challenging this Utah anti-panhandling law, what had they done? How did they infringe on the law? How was it enforced on them?
The law prohibited standing on the sidewalk with a sign visible to passing vehicles. And it prohibited them standing on the sidewalk asking for employment or asking for donations. So if they stood on the sidewalk and they had a sign that said, "I need work," and it was visible to a passing vehicle, they were committing a crime. If the sign said, "I'm unemployed and need a job," they were subjecting themselves to a 90-day jail sentence and a $750 fine. Same thing for asking for a monetary donation. And that's simply crazy. It was a poorly drafted law. It also applied, if you will, to kids that set up a lemonade stand. So if you're going to restrict the First Amendment rights of people, you have to do it very narrowly and not with a broad axe like this statute did.
Speaking with Brian Barnard, he's a civil rights attorney here in Salt Lake City. Also with us, Kathy Bray, president and CEO of Volunteers of America Utah, which works with the homeless. And also joining us in studio, Jason Mathis. He's executive director of the Downtown Alliance, which represents downtown business interests. And Jason, welcome.
Good morning.
A couple of years ago, Salt Lake City tried to restrict panhandling. Eventually, they tabled that effort in light of this anti-panhandling law that Utah was trying to enforce. How have businesses in the downtown core, I guess not just downtown, this isn't just a downtown problem, but throughout the valley, how have businesses responded?
Well, thank you for clarifying. It's not just a downtown problem. And I don't know that it's a problem per se. I think it's more of an issue, something that we need to understand and deal with. To my mind, and I think Kathy spoke about this a little bit, there are three sort of distinct groups. There are people who are legitimately in need, who are homeless, who need a place to stay or who need food to eat, who have some real needs. And then there are panhandlers, and those two groups don't necessarily always mate exactly. There's a little bit of overlap. Certainly there are some people who are panhandling who fall into that first group. But as Kathy said, a lot of times it's really hard to tell. And then finally, there were the group that Brian just spoke about, people who are aggressive, who are maybe not even asking for money, but who are creating an unsafe environment or making people feel insecure. And I think sometimes we use panhandling as a term to talk about all three groups, and that's not really very accurate. I think panhandling is very specific, asking people for money. As you mentioned, a couple years ago, the city did try to draft a very narrow ordinance, as Brian referred to, and in the end tabled it, not because they thought it wasn't constitutional, but because the police department said this is going to be so hard to enforce, to tell somebody you can stand here, but you can't stand here, and panhandle is going to be tough. And the police department said, and you know, in retrospect, I think they have a really good point, that really the answer is not more laws. Really the answer is education and helping people understand what those distinctions are. And that's why what we really try to do is encourage people, instead of giving money to panhandlers, to donate it to Kathy and her organization or Crossroads Urban Center or The Road Home or Catholic Community Services. We have some amazing social service organizations in our community that systematically and strategically work to end homelessness, that work to provide those basic services. And so if you're faced with a panhandler and you have an idea about giving them a buck or $5 or donating that money to a social service organization where you have trained professionals who really are getting at the roots of those challenging problems for those individuals or those families, the answer is always going to be that that money is going to be better spent by a social service organization. And then you don't have to wonder, is this person just using it because they have a substance abuse issue or because of a mental health problem? You know that they can have these services that will be really helpful to them. And really, that's the answer, is to donate to those organizations.
Kathy Bray, thoughts on that? I mean, is that your the end-all advice? Give it to an organization, not to a person? Or are there times when you feel like this person deserves my dime?
Well, we certainly support the idea of giving to an established nonprofit organization. Of course, that's where I'm coming from. So what I would say also is that in cooperation with the City Police Department, we did start the Homeless Outreach Services team when the laws didn't pass. And knowing that we wanted to do something to support businesses downtown and to protect rights of people, both askers and the givers, in trying to give people the opportunities that they want and need. And that includes asking panhandlers, do you need some help? How can we help you? Do you need a place to stay? Do you need some food? Can we bring you to the medical clinic? So when the police, they really have done a great job of going out and individually meeting the panhandling community and finding out who are the individuals, how can we help them, are they open to services? If they're open to services, the nonprofit organizations are responding. We actually were able to help get some folks housed and help them work through addiction issues, and they're no longer panhandling.
Brian and Jason, both of you had mentioned the narrowly tailored type of ordinance. You know, the restrictions are very specific to where and when and how you can panhandle. I have to say, I've been approached in store parking lots many times when I'm loading up my groceries or, you know, getting into my car. Is that protected free speech on private property? You've mentioned sidewalks, Brian Barnard. Is that okay in a parking lot?
Private property is not subject to First Amendment protections. So a grocery store parking lot, the grocery store owner can chase people off. There's no right to free speech on private property. So the grocery store owner can tell panhandlers to get away. What we're talking about here is panhandling on sidewalks, or in public parks, those kinds of areas. And what we're also talking about is the simplistic idea that simply passing a law solves the problem. And that doesn't work. Some legislators are enamored with their own power, and they say, oh, we'll just pass a law and it solves the problem. Well, it doesn't. The problem is much greater than the power of a legislator to simply say, we're going to outlaw panhandling. Panhandling is a symptom rather than the problem. And the problem is, as we're talking about, is getting services to these people, figuring out what their needs are. Yeah, there are some people that, if you will, abuse the idea of panhandling, but there are people that need help. And let's look at what that help is. You don't simply pass a law and solve the world's problems.
Speaking with Brian Barnard, a civil rights attorney in Salt Lake City, he represented four panhandlers who challenged Utah's anti-panhandling law. He won in a federal court last month. Kathy Bray is with us, president and CEO of Volunteers of America Utah, and Jason Mathis, executive director of the Downtown Alliance. And we're talking about panhandling, the constitutional protections over speech, and the effects on local business. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. We need to take a break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. Panhandlers are fixtures throughout many parts of the Salt Lake Valley, asking for help on street corners, freeway off-ramps, and business entrances. Last month, a federal judge ruled Utah's anti-panhandling law was unconstitutional on First Amendment grounds. But some business owners worry aggressive panhandlers are chasing away customers. Today on the program, we're talking about the balance between protecting free speech and minimizing intimidation. My guests include Jason Mathis, Executive Director of the Downtown Alliance, which represents downtown business interests, Kathy Bray, President and CEO of Volunteers of America Utah, and Brian Barnard, a civil rights attorney who represented four panhandlers in that case against Utah's anti-panhandling law. And we invite you to join our conversation if you like. When you encounter a panhandler, do you open your wallet or keep the change? Do you think the public has an interest in regulating the where, when, and how of panhandling? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. The Downtown Alliance recently held an information session about panhandling and security. I guess the question I have is why? Why go to these lengths to have a formal meeting? What motivated you to organize this forum?
Well, every spring, the panhandling population really grows. It increases pretty significantly, and so we start to hear concerns from businesses. It's not always one neighborhood or one street. It kind of moves around. This meeting was really precipitated by some businesses that are located along 500 South, who actually just outside of the boundaries of the area that the Downtown Alliance represents, but they had said, we're really concerned about aggressive behavior from panhandlers, and we want to know what can we do. And so we brought together social service providers, homeless service providers. Kathy was there along with Zach Bale from her organization. Celeste Eggert from The Road Home came. We had Bill Tippetts from Crossroads Urban Center. So they talked about what are the services that we're providing. I think sometimes panhandlers are able to say, you know, I haven't eaten in 2 days, or there's no room at the shelter. Those things are pretty impossible. The shelter really does a good job of finding a spot for somebody every single night. There are lots of places in town that people can get food to eat, whether it's because they're low income and just need to go to the food pantry, or if they need actually a meal prepared for them. So we wanted to make sure people knew what services were available for people. We also wanted to talk about what was legal and illegal. So the police department came, and Chief Burbank spoke for about 20 minutes about sort of the legality issues, what they could enforce, what they couldn't enforce. One of the key findings, one of the things that was the most helpful, and Brian alluded to this, is trespassing signs. The police department has trespassing signs that have been okayed with the city attorney. It's kind of gone through some constitutional structuring. People have looked at them. And businesses can put them up on private property, so in a parking lot of a supermarket or a driveway of a business, and can sign an affidavit with the police department that allows the police department to come in and actually prosecute for trespass in those areas if they are problematic areas. The businesses who had kind of launched this wave of concern have kind of a challenging situation. They're downtown next to a lot of social service providers. They're next to Pioneer Park, and the liquor store is actually on that block too. And the interior architecture of that block creates a lot of linked parking lots that are all private property, but it creates a lot of ways for people to get through the block, not necessarily on the exterior. And it created kind of a challenging situation for hotel guests at the hotel that was there, for people leaving the McDonald's. They just had felt that a lot of their guests weren't comfortable walking into the rest of the city past, you know, as many as 15 different people sort of camped out on the street there, and sometimes engaging in some pretty aggressive behavior. So this was an opportunity really for businesses to come together, share success stories, talk about, you know, do security cameras help out if there's a threatening situation? What laws can be enforced? When should you call the police? When should you just call the dispatch? When should you call 911? And all these things I think were helpful for local businesses to understand. And really this was just sort of an educational meeting to share back and forth with different businesses about what some solutions might be.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, you were at the meeting. What did you hear from businesses that kind of struck you when it comes to panhandling?
I'm not sure I was surprised by anything necessarily. They want their businesses to be successful, and certainly we do too. And so together we were just trying to come up with other ideas. And with the homeless outreach services team that was put together by the nonprofits and the police department.
Are those red parking
meters?
They're
the red parking meters.
You can put your change in there and it goes to the social service agencies.
Yes, through Zions Bank, or you can make a donation directly to Zions Bank if you'd rather do that. It's an alternative for people who want to give and want to help, but don't necessarily want to give to individuals. Mm.
801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. We're talking about panhandling and where the line is between free speech and intimidation. If you'd like to join us, let's go to the phones. Mike is joining us from Salt Lake City. Mike, hello.
Good morning.
Go right ahead.
Well, I had a kind of an awkward situation with a panhandler, and I don't think it's going to stop me from giving to individuals and also giving to organizations. But I was down at the Gateway, and we were approached after dinner of a gentleman asking for a change. And we said, well, what are you going to use it for? You know, I need to catch the train. I need to catch the TREX train. We happen to have a pass, a UTA pass, that was expiring in about 30 minutes in our pocket. And my wife said, well, here, take our TREX pass. He's like, oh, no, you know, I might miss the train. There's some time there. I just need the money because that way I don't have any time constraints with the train. So we give him $3, and we go meet up with some friends. About 10 minutes later, the same guy comes walking around. He comes up and says, hey, guys, do you have any change? And so it put us in an awkward position, right, where we're like, hey, you just got $3 from us. I thought you were going to get on a train. Oh, that's right. I got to finish some stuff, and then I'll get on the train. And so it's those, I think, situations where the community, we should be holding accountability, right? Instead of being like, this is just awkward, saying, what are you doing, man? I just gave you $3. I thought you were going to get on the train. And also not making a relationship out of that. I think it's about relationship and community.
Hmm. Did you ever at any point feel intimidated, Mike?
No, I don't think I ever really feel intimidated. I've kind of gone out and been around homeless before. And so I think maybe if I didn't have those experiences in my past with serving the community, then maybe I might feel intimidated. The part that was more intimidating is not saying something, right? Like, man, I just got panhandled. Like, the guy just took my money and didn't actually use it for what he was going to use it for. Mm. That's if there was any intimidation, it was more, should I be quiet and just look down and not say, hey, you just got $3 from me? Or say, hey, what are you doing? You just got $3 and you're out on the train.
Mike, thanks very much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number. I think Mike's story kind of it shows the awkward situation that we can be put in when we are asked for money. Kathy Bray, you said people need to kind of have in their mind how they're going to respond before they're approached.
I think it's helpful to think through how comfortable you are or not with interacting with people who are strangers who are asking for money. It's difficult. And the situation that Mike described probably happens to people. That's partly why we suggest to go ahead and give to a nonprofit organization, because we want people to be safe as they go around the community, and sometimes those interactions can escalate. And that would be my concern for everyone, is that now you have a more unsafe situation. And certainly calling the police may be appropriate versus engaging with some individuals.
I was just going to say, that actually is what the police have recommended, to not get into a big conversation where you're trying to ask someone to justify why they're asking for money. But, you know, what I don't have a car, and I live downtown, and I've always lived downtown, so I run into the same panhandlers all the time. There's a bald guy who, his mom, every single time I run into her, was just diagnosed with breast cancer at McKay Dee Hospital that day, and he's got to get up there to see her. And he's been saying this for 2 years, and I probably had a dozen interactions with him. And at first, I did kind of confront him, and then it just escalated, and he got mad and swore at at me and flipped me off and said I was calling him a liar, and he was right. I actually was. So now I just say, I don't have any money for you. I'm sorry. I don't have any money for you. And that's become a better solution. And he just moves on to talk to the next person. I think Kathy makes a good point, though. It's really hard for the average person, especially if you're not downtown all the time or in a place where you're seeing the same people all the time, to know who legitimately needs your help and who may just be scamming you. And that's why the best course is generally just to give to a social service organization. I might make just one other point. I think sometimes people give $1 or $2 and they kind of feel like they're off the hook. They feel like they're a charitable person. They've done their duty. They don't need to worry about it anymore. And I think that lets people off the hook too easily. It's so much better to work with a homeless service provider if you care about this issue and make regular routine donations. You could do $10 a month, you could do $20 a month, or you could do an annual pledge, just like you do with NPR stations with
Kate. There you go.
And that really is an answer, because these people are trained, they know how to deal with it, and you can be assured that those monies are really going to help people who are truly in need. And it might not just be a place to stay. There might be drug counseling, there may be child care issues, there might be someone fleeing an abusive situation. There's any number of reasons that someone can be in need. But these folks are trained and they know how to address those problems. And that's always going to be a better investment of your money if you really want to help folks.
801-355-TALK is our number. Again, we're talking about panhandling, how to respond to panhandlers, what the free speech requirements are for panhandling. 801-355-8255. Let's go to Gordon in Salt Lake City. Gordon, hello.
Hi. Like that last caller, I haven't had a car of my own for 4 years, and I live downtown, and I work downtown, and I walk downtown as frequently as possible, and I meet the same panhandlers on the way on my path, and I've gotten to know them over the years. I help them out occasionally with some money. I've talked to them. I've learned their stories, and in my worldview, it's not my place to judge whether they're telling me the truth. I can look in their eyes and see that they're not using, and I know what to look for. My concern is that's been 4 years now, and these same people have been there, and some of them are in real need of some attention medically and physically. There's one young woman who is clearly being abused, and her face is oftentimes bruised, and she always says, oh, she was attacked here, attacked there, and I don't want to inquire too much, but I'd like to be able to go someplace or alert someplace, hey, look, there's these people that stand here, and this woman's in trouble. And I just haven't, until I listened this morning, I was late for, I haven't left for work yet, and your program is right on, because I wanted to do something about this for a couple of weeks now. So if I could get some information on, without being intrusive, you know, say, hey, this guy told us about you, sort of thing. I get some help for these people.
Gordon, thanks very much for the call. Kathy Bray?
Yes, thank you. I think the best initial step when you have a concern about somebody that you meet on the streets like that would be to contact the police. I mean, they really are the folks who are doing the initial interactions with people, kind of a special squad with training to be a little more open and offering assistance for people. And then likely they would call in the social service organization that is most equipped or best equipped to interact with that individual. I don't like to hear that either, and we would want to go meet her, you know, and get in our outreach van and go have a conversation with her and offer some assistance to get in through the domestic violence shelter at the YWCA or another service if she's interested. We could facilitate that placement.
Okay, Gordon, thanks very much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number. Let's go to Elaine. She's been holding in Salt Lake City. Elaine, hi.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
So I'm calling it because I've had a couple of interactions. I live in Salt Lake and drive all over between Capitol Hill and Sugar House and downtown. And I've gone by my gut a couple of times. One time really felt like my $2 was going to get this guy a bus ticket because he was standing right at a bus stop. And indeed, when I drove right back about half an hour later, though, he was gone. So I feel like sometimes you can really sense whether someone's genuine or not, but that's been once in maybe 5 years or more, And other times I've been near grocery stores, haven't had any cash on me. I've come back out of the grocery store and offered someone food, and they've declined. And so I feel personally like my monthly donations to places like the Road Home and the Utah Food Bank are going a lot further than giving out $2 here, $3 there to various individuals.
Okay. Elaine, thanks for sharing your experience. And I guess, Jason, that's exactly what you would advise people to do.
Well, and I would tell people, too, that it doesn't even have to be about money, that you can volunteer, you can provide clothing, you can provide all kinds of different services. I've known about some social services, but really there are some really amazing work that's being done in our community to really help people. Volunteers of America is an organization I try to support financially because I just believe so much in what they're doing. Their homeless youth outreach program, their drop-in center, the drug and alcohol counseling they do, and I'm not just saying this because Kathy's sitting across the table from me. It's remarkable, and they truly are changing people's lives. And to be able to give with confidence and know that $2, you know, I'll be the first to admit that $2 may really help that individual that you're giving it to. They may be completely honest. They may just need a bus pass. But it's so hard to know. It's so difficult for an individual to make that assessment. And if you have that feeling of compassion, of charity, and you want to make a contribution, give it to a social service provider. Give it to Kathy's organization, Volunteers of America, or another wonderful provider, and you'll know that it's really making a difference in someone's life and helping them get out of a domestic abuse situation, or giving them that drug and alcohol counseling that they might need, providing childcare or job training services, or providing a place to sleep, or providing a hot meal or the food pantry. I mean, the list goes on and on. There's an endless number of needs in this community. And there are people who are working really hard every day to meet those needs, and they really deserve our support.
This email from an anonymous emailer: I would like to have the option to give to panhandlers, but do not want to support those who do not need it or abuse it. I've often thought of making small cards that say, I have contributed so many dollars to such and such, the name of the person, to support your need. Go to the address of the social servants agency to collect on my gift to you. That from an anonymous emailer. Our time is running short, but Brian Barnard, some of the places that we've heard about people being accosted by panhandlers, we've talked about the sidewalks, but what about people who are standing at the freeway entrance or the exit? Oftentimes in stop traffic, people will panhandle in the roadways. Are those considered public spaces where free speech is protected?
Those people should be ticketed. Those are dangerous places. They aren't protected when they're standing in a dangerous place. There's laws against standing in the freeway. There's laws against entering the on-ramps and off-ramps. And there's already laws on the books against many of the dangerous things that some panhandlers do. If a panhandler touches you or swears at you or threatens you, they've already committed a crime. Hmm. We don't need more laws. We simply need to enforce the laws that are on the books. However, we don't have enough police officers to enforce those laws. As I say, creating more laws doesn't eliminate the problem. It may deal with some of the symptoms. And that's what we've got by way of dealing with social problems. Legislators think it's a simple problem, and a solution doesn't come by simply passing more laws.
Mm. Here's a tricky one. What about sidewalk cafes? Many business owners, restaurateurs will put chairs out on the sidewalk in the good weather. That's a public space. So do they have to share that environment with a panhandler who is sticking signs in people's faces as they eat?
And you're right. That is a tricky problem, because the sidewalk is a public space, and panhandlers or anybody else, or politicians. You know, we had the caller earlier who said a panhandler lied to him. Well, politicians lie all the time, and we put up with that. So if we can put up with lying politicians, maybe we can put up with lying panhandlers. Mm. But yeah, it is a tricky problem, because you have people in sidewalk cafes and you have panhandlers. And yeah, we have this balancing. The First Amendment is not pretty. The First Amendment sometimes is ugly. But we're stuck with that, and that's what the Constitution protects.
Mm-hmm. I want to sneak in one last phone call. This is Lorraine calling from Murray. Hello, Lorraine.
Hello. Kathy Bray will probably recognize my accent. I want to say, Kathy, I'm better. I want to tell about my daughter's experience in Trafalgar Square in London. She was on her beam end. She had to get a train fare to meet her father in Trafalgar Square. Well, she wasn't in Trafalgar Square, obviously. She's about one stop away from it. Some kind member gave her the money to get the fare so that she could go and meet her father. If she hadn't received that money, I don't know what would have happened. She would have missed out, and it would have been appalling for her. Her father come all the way from Australia. The thing is, and I personally, when I see a young person particularly, I say, there but for the grace of God goes my daughter, and I try and help them. And I would like to say that, you know, these panhandlers on their beam-ends, and yes, I have contributed certainly to Kathy's charity, and I believe in helping those. But also, I heard Sheriff Winder speak lately. That man has more compassion in his little finger than most of the callers this morning. So now, that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Lorraine, thanks very much. Again, going with your gut, Kathy Bray.
Oh, thanks, Lorraine, for your call. And we just want everybody to be safe, really, you know, to be able to get their needs met and to have a community where businesses can thrive and individuals can get their needs met. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show this morning.
Final word, Jason Mathis?
I want to give people a resource to call if they have concerns about panhandlers. You don't need to call 911. That's really for emergency situations. The police dispatch number is 801-799-3000. And if you do have concerns about someone's safety, if you do have concerns because, as Brian said, you've been threatened or you feel unsafe in some way, please do call. The police keep track of those calls. You know, they make decisions based on the urgency of the situation, so they may not respond always immediately, but they do keep track, and that helps them gauge the challenges in different neighborhoods on different streets. So if you do see a problem because you're concerned about the health and safety of a panhandler, you're concerned about your own health and safety, do call 801-799-3000 and let them know about it so that they can help get people the help that they need.
And Brian Barnard, final thoughts on panhandling?
Panhandlers have some rights. Legislators don't have all the wisdom in the world.
All right, we'll leave it there. Brian Barnard, civil rights attorney in Salt Lake City. Thanks very much for your time. Kathy Bray, president and CEO of Volunteers of America Utah. Thanks to you.
Thank you.
And Jason Mathis, executive director of the Downtown Alliance. Jason, thanks for your time
today.
Always
a pleasure.
Up next, where amateur musicians make music, Music Garage. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.